I used to always like put, you know, your race because you're black into movies. I always thought Frankenstein was a nigger. No, because all white folks were always chasing Frankenstein. Remember? Got him! Got him! He was always running like a nigger. And he grunted like niggas. And when he catch him, he's just like nigga. He'd whoop their ass. Like he started threw motherfuckers all over the place. Rah! I said, get him, nigga. Rah! He'd steal shit, remember? And then white people were scared of him like they're scared of niggas. Oh, what was that? What was that? Niggerstein, is it him? That shit used to fuck me up. I'm sorry. He's trying to catch that nigga, wouldn't he?
Gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right next to Terrible Tommy, Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station.
Well, the date is, guess what? The 1st of September. The first day of September. Now you got about 30 days to get her done, man. So get at it. Yeah. We're at P.O. Box 401 as usual. That's where you send your money. Lots of money. And before you squander it all off on Duke and the boys, have a little concern for us lonely little guys in the woods who are trying to crank out the information straight and correctly. Anyhow, and send your letters. We'd like to hear from you. If you have any letters you want to go to the POWs and you don't want to send them from your address, well, send them to me and I'll send them on to the boys in the clink. Yeah. Well, I do have a few letters here. I may read a few here before we get going with the meat of the show. This one comes from friends of ours out in the Northwest. Hey, TT, methinks Matt Hale's book is okay, but it is stuff that most of us already know. It would be good for new people, as long as the new people understand that it is the goal for whites to unite, but we can't do that physically now, because running around with groups and organizations is way too dangerous. Reading a few pages every day is okay. Just please balance it out with the White Man's Urban Survival Guide or the 100 Deadly Skills by retired Navy SEAL Clint Emerson is a pretty good book, too. Thank you. Yes, I think most of our friends know the philosophy of what we believe in or what we don't believe in. Tactics and information on survival and all that kind of stuff is very important. And that's what should be concentrated on. A lot of the other stuff we've read for years and years, decades and decades. I also think that audio and video is far more powerful than books. Simply due to the translation time and so forth. You got to read it, transfer it, and then interpret it, and so forth. A video is straight through to the right part of the brain, and audio too. I think it cuts out a lot of in-between stuff. I'm not going to throw book reading under the bus, but I'm saying that in modern times, video and audio, I think, are much more impressive and much more important. But it's a common habit and part of its ego that people have to write a book. You know, people keep asking me, when are you going to write a book? I just don't see that it's a real important thing that I write a book. I mean, if you listen to all those radio shows on our resist.com and all the interviews I've done, you got enough to make 20 books if you want to do it. But the time it takes to write books and get them printed and get them distributed is pretty much a slow process, and I don't think it's that effective. And to some people, it gives them an oversense of their own ego too. I've noticed a lot of guys like that, that in writing a book, somehow that's putting them up on top of the pedestal. And I don't think that's true at all. That's a 20th century concept in a 21st century world. Well, here's a short letter from David Tate. David Tate was the youngest member of the Order Brutus Schweigen, working for Bob Matthews and the boys and his jolly band. Yeah. Unfortunately, he got in a shootout with an Arkansas trooper and killed him. And, of course, he got life in prison, which is sad, and it's a bad situation. But anyhow, dear Tom, just a short one to thank you for all the funds I found on my account this week. Thank you. As always, it is appreciated and quite timely. I was moved to the honors wing last month, and my cell is right in front of the microwave, so it keeps making extra goodies. And with phone access all day, I am using up my phone minutes faster. But now I'm getting the change under control, so not burning funds as much up as much. Got to keep myself regulated. Had a change of conditions in trying to get moved away from a bad cellmate a few months back. I put in a request for the honor wings as one of the possible measures to get moved, and then belatedly that request went through and I was moved to the honor wings. That request had to pass through the warden, who was forced to retire, which held it up. He'd been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and forgot where he put all the prisoners. No, that's me. And have been acting out delusions. And it caught me off guard. One evening, I get a notice from an acting warden that I'm approved, since we have no warden. And the next morning, I was moved. My new cellie is okay. Spends all his time reading novels or off working as a GED tutor. It's quite a change. I've been locked in this cell for 20-plus hours a day for the past 8 years in so-called general population. Now I have an open wing access to the mini-yard, just being outside, all day and all evening, although the big yard and the library is still limited. Yet despite the change, I find that one man can be an island. I am completely alone as regards anyone of our cause, and even as regards solid prisoners. I felt this way since coming to this camp, but much more so now. I'm finding making the change over more difficult this time around, and not getting things done like I was. I suppose an adjustment time is necessary, but I've been spinning my wheels and have spent most of July and now half of August fiddly-farting around on doing anything productive with my time, studies, good reading, and so on. I need to get my brain in order. I am, however, getting regular exercise. No real news otherwise. Hope things are well with you and yours. Take care of yourself. And may Father and God of our great race bless and keep you and ours always for the folk, faith, and family. David Tate is still an Identity Christian. And like I, you know as well as I do, I'm not into that anymore, but my main interest is his political position and his racial position, and we're not going to throw anybody under the bus just because we disagree with them on religion. Even Dennis Mahan has still got one foot in the religion and one foot in the survival of the fittest. So I tell him what I think, and he tells me what he thinks. And it's difficult to get people weaned away from religion. Very difficult, especially the Christian religion. Now, here is from a white POW. He's got himself locked up here. Racial greetings, comrade. Remember me? I contacted you via email and phone about 7 years ago. I had just started up the Valhalla-bound skinhead movement in Spokane, Washington. I asked you for advice, and you said not to go the boots and braces route. I still feel that there is a need for both above and below groups and actions, lone wolf and organizations for propaganda. Remember, you were going to speak to the Aryan Nations World Congress. That was going to be on my property. Well, I got locked up. I fell for the movement related. Zog twisted it, but it still didn't look too bad in the media. Google my name and you'll see what I mean. My favorite is The Scourge of Hatred on Spokesman.com, our Spokane newspaper, the Spokane Review's websites. It was front page Super Bowl Sunday 2010. I was over the top till I got caught. I did leave behind many comrades I personally had awakened, though. Our group, VBS, is still going and promoting the cause. We have both above and below comrades. In 2 years, I built it up enough to last. Now we know what not to do based on my mistakes. Like you, I can now never be a lone wolf as I drew so much heat, so I push propaganda and recruit openly. I'd like to receive your resistance stuff, literature, flyers, whatever, so I can promote it. If there is a newsletter, I'd like to subscribe. I fully support your methods as well as the other ones. I buy a lot of white power reading material, books, newsletters, and the like. I share them around here and send it to my comrades on the street. I'm slammed down 24/7 in a program and have a lot of time to write. Could you put me on your POW list so I can write some comrades? I get plenty of mail, but love encouraging everyone I can out there, and can't get enough of it. The cause is my life. I will send my paperwork if all the news sites it's not enough to confirm my status. Multiple hate assaults and such led to my imprisonment, and my whole cases were about VBS and the beliefs we hold. I know you're a busy man, so I'll wrap this up like I came, with a stomp of my boot and a stiff arm. Salute, 88, Weissmach. Thank you for your time. Okay. I guess I never read the article about what he did, but it sounded like he was doing physical stuff on the street, I guess. Well, remember, a lone wolf can put out plenty of literature. There's nothing wrong with a lone wolf being just as active at putting out literature as someone who's so-called above ground, so you can be lone wolf for their whole operation. But here's a fellow that now they've got a group, and obviously they're maintaining contact, and if they're writing each other and calling each other, they're on the list. There's no other way to do it. I mean, you know, you're either not on the list or you're on the list. Now, a lot of guys don't care if they're on the list, but it just makes it that much easier if you decide to do something naughty for them to pick you up. and naughty many times just boils down to defending yourself, and they still get you. There is another letter from a person we've been sending funds to for a few years now. He's down south. He's in prison for defending himself against the black. A black attacked him with a cement block, came at him with a cement block, and he shot and killed him. So now he's doing, I don't know, 40, 50 years just for defending himself. But he did get up before he was supposed to get up for his parole. He says, the official decree concerning my first parole release date arrived in the past month. The date was what they intended. The methodology and the findings were and perhaps are corrupt and pretextual, respectively. In the commission's order, I noted that six persons spoke at the hearing against me. Of course, I was not permitted to attend. That seems ridiculous. You would think that the prisoner should be allowed to at least sit in to the parole hearing. The interesting thing is that it did not name those who spoke, and I can pretty much guarantee they were not there to speak on my behalf. If you have a moment and can check the website of the Florida Commission on Offender Review, might list the witnesses or provide information on obtaining transcripts, they made no offer of such to me. And I think it might be very surprising. I'm thinking some piece of crap like Morris Dees was there. Maybe a Fed. Hey, you never know. Anyway, if you feel like it and have a minute, of course, I know you're very busy. Yeah, that's something I've got to do. Just got a book. Haven't started it yet. Just read The Dust Jacket. It's called Perfidy. Perfidy. It's a reissue. You've probably heard or read it. Consider the irony. Ben Klassen always called them perfidious Jews, and it's about Jews. In the case you don't know, it's the story of a Hungarian Jew Holocaust survivor who identifies a guy in Israel, part of the Ben-Gurion government, as having been a Nazi collaborator, and or the government sued or tried the witness for slander and lost. Somebody beat the witness survivor half to death, and someone murdered the alleged collaborator. All fingers apparently point to the Mossad. But all governments are dirty. NSA, CIA, Mossad, KGB, Stasi, and so on. All the same. Speaking of which, check this little story out. I had someone else also looking for a website where the crucial witness statements of my case might be available. She was sure she found one, clicked on it, and the screen went blank. Then came up a pop-up saying, information from this website has been censored. So I want to know what site that had been. So a couple of days later, she went back over her search history, and there was a blank line, a gap where the site had been. Truly incredible. Out, I believe, it is to be true. So who's doing that? ARA, Sharp, Southern Poverty Law Center? No, it's just government. Collaborator or more command type, common type like Harold Covington, the government itself couldn't and wouldn't do that, right? Liberal hacktivists, or maybe our own people, and someone mad that I'm no longer COTC affiliated, or some kind of creeps that showed up at my parole hearing. As for the parole issue, I'm writing a lengthy appeal. It will do no good at all. There is no justice in any case, certainly when in cases like mine. These bitches are scared. Why? Because they know how wrong they were to do what they did. Here I'm referring to the six that went to the hearing. The interesting part, though, is the commission made no mention of public or victim input as a basis for setting the date. see in Florida they can't and do it like that. They set the date. Then if the inmate reaches the date, somehow they still don't get out. And remember, I'm not making this up. It's Florida Statute 947.1B. So yeah, those bitches are scared too. Because if they ever see justice, it will be ugly for them. Anyway, I'm surprised you don't get hacked a lot, because you are doing a good job, which continues to appreciate. Much thanks for everything. And thank you for the donation. Okay. So there's another guy being screwed to the wall by the Just Us system. It's interesting that the website said censored. This site is censored. It's public information. It's supposed to be public information. Well, here's another guy I haven't heard from for a long time. Tom, thanks for the stuff and letter and information. Robert Miles at his farm in Cahokta, outside Howell, Michigan. Been there a dozen times from 83 to 88. I'll ask if someone knows where he's buried, because we want to put it on our national graves registry for martyrs, heroes of the white race. I save boxes of books and magazines, booklets, cards, stickers, and so on. That trailer was packed full, man. I've been selling a few things here and there. It's a shame that the mainstream goyim threw out the classic racial stuff from the resistance person, especially after they die. Thanks for the POW information. I'll start on a friend's computer soon. I'm overdue. I've got to learn. Tom, what got me into the cause was how the farmers were getting screwed by the banks. You're wrong about me being a right-winger, as I read every war insurgent paper from 85 to 2007. Third position, white worker power to the max. Your articles on the labor struggle were the first things that I read in war. After 34 years of being active in various groups and seeing much idiocy, failure, and so on, I'm open to new tactics. Our crew locally is centered around the NSM. I was in the National Alliance for years until it imploded. Working with the NSM has given me a new lease on life. No shit. I did not do anything for years, activism-wise, until a year ago. Thank you, local NS folks. I'm stoked. I'm enclosing Carl Henn's flyers on economics and politics, as I also do not agree with your opinion on Carl being right-wing. Now, I'll always value your assessment on things and so on, but the RNPA is a lot more on top of things than what meets the eye. Check out this website, and if it's close to his flyers for quality, hey, right on. Tina of Aryan Syndicate sent me some DVDs, quite a few on race and reasons. I watched your number 25, Support Labor, from 2009-2010 or so. Man, your info on banks and major corporations is mind-boggling, but not surprising to me. But the facts, oh man, I figure these mainstream sheeple, whites and all races, would be interested in economic scams just for the personal greed factor alone. Around here, Metro Detroit, people still have it too good. I'm serious. SUVs, smartphones, flat-screen TVs will insulate them from reality. When the color of your skin is your uniform and food and water and ammo and shelter and medical is scarce, then Whitey will slowly wake up a bit, we hope. We're sending Dennis and Matt Hale commissary, as our members locally got plenty of cash compared to me. Tom, I've got bored with the usual booze, drugs, gossip, sports, talk about my job, goyim around here, so I have a lot of folks to talk about real issues to hang out with. Man, it's a breath of fresh air. That 8 Mile Pawn place is about 6 to 8 miles west of me, and I've been seen 2 or 3 episodes, and it's a setup. These coons would whack that Hebe and his snooty-ass kids in a hot minute. I do see the spooks arguing with Chaldean or Iraqi Arabs, store owners, a lot in the old days. Well, it's 11 p.m. past my bedtime, so I'll be winding this up. Tom, it's great to communicate with you, brother. Next time we'll be a high-tech, personally, to send some smoke signals. Just kidding. How many activists after 34 years are now super motivated more than ever? Whatever I'm doing must be the ticket. You yourself said to enjoy the struggle in so many words. Well, I got way out somewhere for a while. Oh, yeah, I'm a grandpa now, so it's even more commitment. Hey, I hope John and your daughters are doing well. Great family. Take care and stay strong. Okay, that's the end of that one.
United States military has won only a single major war since the end of World War II, the Gulf War of 1990-91. But the United States military contractors continue to win major budget wars in Congress nearly every year, proving that no force on earth can resist their lobbying prowess and political clout. Consider the steady march to victory of the biggest single weapons program in history, the planned purchase of advanced Lockheed Martin F-35 jets by the Air Force, Navy, and Marines at a total projected cost of more than $1 trillion. Lockheed Martin's F-35 warplane. Lockheed Martin's F-35 warplane. The Air Force and Marines have both declared the Joint Strike Fighter ready for combat, and Congress is now forking over billions of dollars a year to acquire what is slated to become a fleet of 2,400 jets. Yet the world's most expensive fighter bomber still doesn't work properly and may never perform as advertised. That's not Dezinformatsiya from Russian Information Warfare Specialists. That's the official opinion of the Pentagon's top weapons evaluator, Michael Gilmore. In an August 9 memo obtained by Bloomberg News, Gilmore warned senior Pentagon officials that the F-35 program is actually not on a path toward success but instead on a path toward failing to deliver the aircraft's promised capabilities. He said the program is running out of time and money to complete the planned flight testing and implement the required fixes and modifications. The military testing czar reported that complex software problems and testing deficiencies continue to be discovered at a substantial rate. As a result, the planes may fail to track moving targets on the ground, warn pilots when enemy radar systems spot them, or make use of a newly designed bomb. Even the F-35's gun may not function properly. Devastating assessments. The internal Pentagon assessment was just the latest in a long list of devastating critical assessments and development setbacks for the plane. They include repeated groundings of the plane due to fires and other safety issues, the discovery of dangerous engine instability, and helmets that can cause fatal whiplash. The plane even got soundly beaten in a mock engagement with a much older, and cheaper, F-16. Russian President Vladimir Putin with German Chancellor Angela Merkel on May 10, 2015, at the Kremlin. Photo from Russian government. Russian President Vladimir Putin with German Chancellor Angela Merkel on May 10, 2015, at the Kremlin. Photo from Russian government. Last year, an article in the Conservative National Review argued that the biggest threat that the United States military faces over the next few decades is not the carrier-killing Chinese anti-ship ballistic missile, or the proliferation of inexpensive quiet diesel-electric attack subs, or even Chinese and Russian anti-satellite programs. The biggest threat comes from the F-35. For this $1 trillion-plus investment, we get a plane far slower than a 1970s F-14 Tomcat, a plane with less than half the range of a 40-year-old A-6 Intruder, and a plane that had its head handed to it by an F-16 during a recent dogfight competition. Likening the F-35 to a previous failed fighter jet program, retired Air Force Colonel Dan Ward observed last year, "Perhaps the truly best scenario for the Joint Strike Fighter is for it to follow in the footsteps of the F-22 and provide a combat capability that is irrelevant to actual military needs. That way, when the whole fleet gets grounded because of an unsolvable flaw, the impact on our defense posture would be nil." Lockheed's pay-to-play ad agency. Coming to the program's defense most recently was military analyst Dan Gur, in the blog of the respected magazine, The National Interest. Gur belittled critics in the Pentagon's Operational Test and Evaluation Office as green eyeshade people, like the goblins at Gringotts in the Harry Potter series. Unknown. Describing the F-35 as a revolutionary platform, he declared, "Its ability to operate undetected in hostile airspace, gathering information and even targeting data on enemy air and ground targets, before launching surprise attacks demonstrates a decisive advantage over existing threat systems." The Joint Strike Fighter test program is making progress at an accelerated rate. More to the point, even before it has completed the rigid performance template laid out by DOTNE, the F-35 has demonstrated capabilities that far exceed any current Western fighter. If that reads a bit like a Lockheed Martin marketing brochure, consider the source. In his article, Gur identified himself only as a vice president of the Lexington Institute, which bills itself as a non-profit public policy research organization headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. What Gur didn't say and the Lexington Institute doesn't generally disclose is that it receives contributions from defense giants Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, and others, which pay Lexington to comment on defense, according to a 2010 profile in Politico. Earlier the same year, Harper's contributor Ken Silverstein called the widely quoted think tank the defense industry's pay-to-play ad agency. He added, "Outfits like Lexington produce the press conferences, position papers, and op-eds that keep military money flowing to defense contractors." Gur's indirect association with Lockheed gives a hint as to why programs like the F-35 continue to thrive despite performance failures, gigantic cost overruns, and schedule delays that would otherwise trigger headline-grabbing congressional investigations and produce streams of indignant rhetoric from Fox News commentators about government failure. Promoting the new Cold War. Think tanks like the Lexington Institute are prime movers behind the domestic propaganda campaign to revive the Cold War against the diminished Russian state and justify weapons programs like the F-35. As Li Feng observed recently in The Intercept, the escalating anti-Russian rhetoric in the United States presidential campaign comes in the midst of a major push by military contractors to position Moscow as a potent enemy that must be countered with a drastic increase in military spending by NATO countries. Thus, the Lockheed-funded Aerospace Industries Association warns that the Obama administration is failing to spend enough on aircraft, ship, and ground combat systems to adequately address Russian aggression on NATO's doorstep. The Lockheed and Pentagon-funded Center for European Policy Analysis issues a stream of alarmist reports about Russian military threats to Eastern Europe. And the highly influential Atlantic Council, funded by Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, the United States Navy, Army, Air Force, Marines, and even the Ukrainian World Congress, promotes articles like why peace is impossible with Putin and declares that NATO must commit to greater military spending to deal with a revanchist Russia. Origins of NATO's expansion. The campaign to portray Russia as a menace, led by contractor-funded pundits and analysts, began soon after the Cold War ended. In 1996, Lockheed executive Bruce Jackson founded the United States Committee on NATO, whose motto was Strengthen America, Secure Europe, Defend Values, Expand NATO. NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. Its mission ran directly contrary to promises by the George H.W. Bush administration not to expand the Western military alliance eastward after the fall of the Soviet Union. Joining Jackson were such neoconservative hawks as Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, and Robert Kagan. One neocon insider called Jackson, who went on to co-found the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, the nexus between the defense industry and the neoconservatives. He translates us to them, and them to us. The organization's intense and highly successful lobbying efforts did not go unnoticed. In 1998, the New York Times reported that American arms manufacturers, who stand to gain billions of dollars in sales of weapons, communication systems, and other military equipment if the Senate approves NATO expansion, have made enormous investments in lobbyists and campaign contributions to promote their cause in Washington. The 4 dozen companies whose main business is arms have showered candidates with $32.3 million since the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe at the beginning of the decade. By comparison, the tobacco lobby spent $26.9 million in that same period, 1991 to 1997. A spokesman for Lockheed said, "We've taken the long-term approach to NATO expansion, establishing alliances. When the day arrives and those countries are in a position to buy combat aircraft, we certainly intend on being a competitor." The lobbying worked. In 1999, against Russian opposition, NATO absorbed the Czech Republic, Hungary, and Poland. In 2004, it added Bulgaria, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia. Albania and Croatia joined next in 2009. Most provocatively, in 2008, NATO invited Ukraine to join the Western alliance, setting the stage for the dangerous conflict between NATO and Russia over that country today. The fortunes of American arms makers soared. By 2014, the 12 new NATO members had purchased close to $17 billion worth of American weapons, according to Andrew Coburn, while Romania celebrated the arrival of Eastern Europe's first $134 million Lockheed Martin Aegis Ashore missile defense system. Last fall, Washington Business Journal reported that if anyone is benefiting from the unease between Russia and the rest of the world, it would have to be Bethesda-based Lockheed Martin Corp., NICE, LMT. The company is positioned to make large profits off what could very well be an international military spending spree by Russia's neighbors. Citing a big contract to sell missiles to Poland, the newspaper added, officials from Lockheed aren't explicitly declaring that Russian President Vladimir Putin's adventurism in Ukraine is good for business, but they aren't shying away from recognizing the opportunity that Poland is presenting them as Warsaw continues to embark on a massive military modernization project, one that has accelerated as tensions grip Eastern Europe. Lockheed's lobby machine. Lockheed continues to pump money into the American political system to ensure that it remains the nation's largest military contractor. From 2008 to 2015, its lobbying expenditures exceeded $13 million in all but 1 year. The company sprinkled business from the F-35 program into 46 states and claims that it generates tens of thousands of jobs. Among the 18 states enjoying a claimed economic impact of more than $100 million from the fighter jet is Vermont, which is why the F-35 gets the support even of Senator Bernie Sanders. As he told one town hall meeting, it employs hundreds of people. It provides a college education for hundreds of people. So for me, the question is not whether we have the F-35 or not. It is here. The question for me is whether it is located in Burlington, Vermont, or whether it is located in Florida. President Dwight Eisenhower, delivering his farewell address on January 17, 1961. In 1961, President Eisenhower observed that the conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry had begun to influence every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. In his famous farewell address to the nation, Eisenhower warned that we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. How right he was. But not even I could have imagined the extravagant costs to the nation of failing to hold that complex at bay, ranging from a $1 trillion fighter jet program to the needless and far more dangerous resurrection of the Cold War a quarter century after the West achieved victory.
Well, that goes along with what I sent out to you yesterday. We're totally under control of the military-industrial complex. We're living in a police state, and it's guided by the tremendous profits of the arms industry in every state in the Union. Do you hear that talked about by either candidate? No. What they talk about is more. We need more. Build more. And, of course, these arms corporations say, whoa, that's great. And they want to keep you in fear all the time. The Russians are going to get you. The Russians are going to get you, just like they did through the Cold War. So this is very important to your race, and you better pay attention. Personally, I see no way to stop it except a complete economic collapse of the nation. Throw us into a severe depression. But if there's $1 left in the treasury, these arms makers are going to get it. And with NATO now poised to do war games on the border of Russia, they're just looking for trouble. These people are all psychopaths, as explained in a show last week. They're psychopaths. Now, to show you how they play the propaganda, of course, they don't talk at all or very much about this bloated arms dealing situation and the provocations that are directed like at Russia and so forth, and how they're creating wars all over the world. You know, our military is in 125 countries. That's almost every country in the world. 125 countries. So it's a worldwide police state headed by our so-called government. But here's what they do. They keep your mind on things like this. Unidentified lone wolf poses great biggest threat to global security. not the hundreds and thousands of atomic bombs and missiles and everything that goes along with it. Most of them do not have affiliations with the Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, Hamas, Lashkar-e-Taiba, Al-Shabaab, and so on. They aren't trained by any of the jihadist outfits, but they're dangerous, ruthless, and hypnotized. They're radicalized to the optimum level. All they aspire is killing atheists, Jews, Christians, non-Muslims, and enemies of Islam. A lone wolf becomes a jihadist on his own. Or her own, and decides their targets without letting anyone else even know or sense of it. They hunt their prey on their own, and even seconds before the brutal attack, the victims cannot imagine he or she was actually under the deadly sight of a lone wolf. For accomplishing her holy desire, a female lone wolf even would not hesitate flirting or sleeping with her target, in case that is the most convenient option of getting the target unprepared so that the attack or operation gets fully accomplished. She won't hesitate stabbing, hacking, or shooting the man to death with whom she might have pretended or performed extreme romance even minutes or seconds before. Wow. There are many websites run by Islamists and jihadists that inspire people to become lone wolves, following ideologies of various militant outfits. They upload techniques to make grenade or bombs at home using domestic appliances or kitchen utensils, and guidelines on how to determine a target and what to do before the attack. In brief, these websites give the comprehensive tutorials to a lone wolf, make him or her a deadly jihadist with the extreme radicalized mindset of killing the enemies of Islam and embracing death to become a martyr. See, this is how they get guys to join up in the military to go fight this stuff. According to fact findings, the initial process of someone transforming into a jihadist lone wolf would mostly begin from hate speeches in the mosques, or by spending time with another radicalized person, or even a lone wolf. Counterterrorism experts are keeping eyes of jihadist outfits. But do they know how many lone wolves are being created every day? We don't think so. That's the kind of stuff they're putting out. Well, if there were the number of lone wolves that they think there are out there, they'd be in bad trouble, because it's true, a lone wolf can strike any place, any time, at anything he decides to strike. But are they doing it? Well, ISIS is a so-called ragtag army. It's not a lone wolf. And most of these people are operating in organizations. But anyhow, nothing about the F-35 and how much it's going to cost and how many people the F-35 can kill at one time. None of that stuff. But you got to watch out. Those lone wolves are everywhere. Like I said, the whole world is full of psychopaths, and they're all playing their little games. And then they call us nuts. I got a good move for you, a movie called Deadly Code. It's starring Malkovich, and it's a story about these Russian Siberians who had their own little army and everything and stood off the Soviets. The Soviets, they went out and killed them and robbed them and everything else. And then when the Soviets fell, they did the same thing to the Russian army that tried to come in and give them trouble. They were really a kick-ass bunch, and that is the code. the movie. And you'll find that on Netflix.
The winters seem never ending. And the pack was dying of hunger. The leader of the pack, the oldest of them all, was out in front, comforting the young wolves, telling them that spring was coming. But at a certain point, one young wolf decides to stop. He says he has had enough of cold and hunger, and he says he's going to live among men, because the important thing is to stay alive. The young wolf lets himself be caught, and with the passing of time, he forgets he was ever a wolf. One day, many years later, as he is out hunting with his master, he runs servile to collect the prey. But he realizes the prey is the old leader of the pack. He falls silent with shame, but the old wolf speaks and says to him,
"I die happy because I live my life as a wolf. You, on the other hand, belong neither to the world of wolves nor to the world of men. Hunger comes and goes, but dignity, once lost, never returns.
That our wrath may become yours.
Kalima.
We must respect all living creatures. Except for the police, people who work in government, bankers, usurers, and anyone who has the power and money to exploit the simple people. Stealing from these people is allowed. But remember, it's crazy to want too much. Man more than his heart can love.
White supremacist sort of movement moment of flexing their muscles. I remember you saying that. I thought that was an interesting analogy. Do you think there's any truth to this video other than the fact that it's amateurish, though?
Well, I mean, you could look at Hillary's followers and find a whole lot of people you wouldn't necessarily be happy with. They don't need these Klan guys running around in their uniforms, because that's hurting him more than it's helping him. And then you got David Duke trying to live off of him, build his career, what there is left of it. It's really sort of a mixed up mess. And I'm a white separatist. I never use the term white supremacy, but the people now who represent the racial view are what they call white nationalists. And I call them neocon white racists because...
Wait, say this again?
I call them neocon white racists.
Most people call themselves what?
I call most of these people now supposedly representing the racial position neocon racists.
Neocon racists.
Yeah, they're playing a game, you know. They're racial, but they don't want to come out and say I'm racial because nobody ever defines the term racial. What do you mean racist? I mean, to me, racist is simply working for the best interests of your race, period. That's it. But these guys, when they accuse Breitbart and these guys of being racist, they go on and on and on about how they're not racist. And they're probably not, because I think half the people are using white racism or just using it for money.
The reason I wanted to call you specifically, Tom, is I thought you might be able to give me a better perspective on this, because what basically the narrative in the media right now about Breitbart is the fact that they are no different than that this alternative right sort of phrase, right, that they call themselves this alternative right, is essentially cut from the same cloth as the Ku Klux Klan and the neo-Nazi movement. It's just better dressed up and with better technology awareness and it's basically wrapped up in a bow, but it essentially aspires to the same sort of ideals of against immigration, against diversity, and extreme conservatism to the point of racism. I'm wondering whether you agree with that, if you think that this is really just a newly sort of neo-Nazi movement that's dressed up in better clothes.
No, this is just something that's been brought up during this campaign. Both sides are going to milk it to death. And then after the campaign's over, they'll all disappear. Except the legitimate ones like myself. I mean, most of the people on both sides.
You don't think they're gonna? You think they're gonna? This alternative movement is gonna fizzle out?
They can't keep it going. I mean, if they destroy the Republican Party, that's fine with me. But they can't keep this going because the people I represent don't want anything to do with Breitbart.
Wait. I want to get this, because this is interesting to me. So you're saying they're going to fizzle out and only the real what you said are going to be, like me, are going to stay?
Yeah, I go day to day, week to week, month to month. I never change, not much.
No, but you said, how did you call yourself? You said they're going to all fizzle out and only the real what?
The real white racist separatists will be left. And these guys like Breitbart and those guys, they're not racist. Hell, they work for the big banks. His outfit's full of Jews. I mean...
Wait. Hold on, I want this. Real racist, they're what? It's full of Jews?
Yeah, his whole outfit is full of Jews, and he goes on about every 20 minutes and say how much he hates racism and all that. The man who started it, Breitbart, declared that. He's out to destroy racism. Don't sound like people that I want to deal with. No, these are just, this is a fad they're going through, and they're going to run it through the campaign and then put it to bed after the campaign's over.
Wait, this is a fad?
A fad, yeah.
Yep, and they're going
to... They're going to put, after the campaign's over and Hillary's elected, they'll put it to bed, but then, of course, they'll keep it going against Hillary, too. It'll give them something to do.
It's over and Hillary Clinton, you think Hillary Clinton's going to win?
Unless she does something crazy. I mean, unless they...
Hillary, after Hillary Clinton wins, they're going to what? They're going to what?
Most of this stuff will be put back to bed, all this Breitbart stuff, because they cannot make people like me happy, and they won't get people like myself to support them because I know where they're coming from. It's a game. I've dealt with these right-wing phonies for decades.
I've dealt with
these right-wing phonies for decades. The perfect example is David Duke. He just milks these people for all he can get out of them. And now he's trying to restart his career on the backs.
Ask you this. If they're not real racists, like you say, and they're not real, white racists, like you call yourself, white racist separatists.
Separatists, yeah.
They're not really that. How do you explain the fact that they're so successful? I mean, they have, a very successful site that has a lot of following.
Yeah, they're appealing to a lot of the people out there that look at things just superficially, but I say...
Are they appealing to the closeted sort of racists, the ones that are... they don't want the stigma of being racist, but at the same time, they do have some of those beliefs and have maybe feel that the white race is under attack?
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, there's all people, they come from all different beliefs, out there that, see, the problem is I deal with people who won't come out and say they're racist. And I don't want to deal with people who will not admit they're racist. I want my friends and the people who work with me to say, yeah, I'm a white racist. What's your problem? None of these guys will admit to be white racist. They'll give you 100 different answers. They'll beat around the bush all day long. Oh, no, I'm just a nationalist. Oh, I love the Republican Party. No, I like the way Donald Trump combs his hair. They'll come up with a million excuses. Or, I'm just this way because I hate Hillary. No, I hate hypocrites. My main enemy is a hypocrite. I've never been a hypocrite. If I'm a white racist, I'm a white racist, And I'm out there. And I'll tell anybody.
Hey, Tom, let me ask you one more question. Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The fact that he has brought in the CEO of Breitbart, Steve Bannon, has sort of given the white supremacist movement, or however you want to call it, white separatist movement, or people who are, even those who may not be white, call themselves white separatists, but perhaps have some of those beliefs, the closeted ones.
No, this guy comes from the Hollywood bunch out there. He's no more a real white racist than anybody could be. That's all bullshit. He's just playing a game. And that's the problem. One thing you probably don't know about...
That's not my question. My question is, by bringing him to be the top guy of his campaign, does that signal to people who may be racist or closeted racist that he is basically saying, I'm on your side. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. I may say things now that I have to say to get elected that you may not like, but here's the proof. Is that how you see it?
That's all there is going. They're all a bunch of hypocrites. That's my point. My point is these guys are all hypocrites. And I don't want anything to do with any of those guys because after the election's over, they'll be gone. Breitbart and these guys come from just the opposite background.
Do you really think, Tom, that that's part of the deal, that that's part of the reason why of all the people he chose someone who, with no experience in politics to run a campaign, a major campaign, because it basically tells those people that have been supporting him, I know how you feel him on is this how you see it?
Well, yeah, that's the way they're playing it. I'm just the lonely guy out here in the woods that knows what's going on, and I don't want to be any part of it. I would have been with Donald Trump back in the 40s when him and his father kept the blacks out of New York City, the Bronx and Brooklyn, and would not rent to hundreds of thousands of apartments that they managed, and they kept the blacks out of them all. You know, that's racism. That's real racism.
When his father kept, what did you say, when his father...
Well, it's in the new book that...
Yeah, but say what you just said again. I just want to write it down the way you said it.
Well, Donald and his father controlled hundreds of thousands of rental apartments throughout New York City, and they would not rent at all to blacks. And the federal government had to come down on them and sue them and everything else till they finally gave in to let blacks in the apartments. Roy Cohn, who was the right-hand man of Senator, what's his name?
I know. I'm familiar with Cohn.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyhow, they were sure racist back then. He held off that Negro invasion.
Trump is racist?
Pardon me?
Do you think, you know, Trump growing up under Fred, in that racist environment that you said, that was real racism?
It sure was. I did.
And he looks up to his dad. You know, when you hear him talking about his dad, it's with a lot of reverence. I'm wondering whether you think that there's... That he, too, is really racist, but he can't say it. But
sure.
He has this... Yeah.
Sure, he's down deep. That's the way, well, like he said, he didn't want a black working in his casino as an accountant. He wanted a Yarmulke-wearing Jew, white Jew. You got to get a hold of that new book that just came out.
Have you read it?
I heard an hour interview with the two authors, and I got enough out of it. It's great. It's a great, I think it makes him look pretty good, really.
Hey, buddy, I think I got great stuff from you. I really appreciate you calling me back. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I picked up a little soundbite from a film, True Detective. You might have seen it, Matthew McConaughey. And the other one, I forgot his name. But anyhow, I thought this was pretty amusing, so I cut the clip out of the film to run it for you.
He's a failure.
And I forgot to tell you, this was these two detectives had gone to this tent revival meeting. They're looking for a guy, but the conversation between the two detectives is very interesting. One is agnostic, maybe atheist, but pretty logically speaking. The other one's sort of nominal Christian, but he's a rounder, he's a whoremonger, he's a drunk. So let's listen to this interplay between these two detectives as they're standing at the back of this crowd out of nowhere's land in a revival tent.
Where is natural?
Parish FD said the church burned down 4 months earlier. No prints. Put out an APB on Friends of Christ. A week later, they were in Franklin. Revival ministry. Old time religion. You can imagine what Mr. Charisma thought of that.
Who do you think the average IQ that this group is, huh?
Can you see Texas up there on your high horse? What do you know about these people?
Just observation and deduction. See a propensity for obesity, poverty, the yen for fairy tales.
Tope's putting what few bucks they do have into little wicker baskets being passed around. I think it's safe to say that nobody here's going to be splitting the atom, Marty.
See that? Your fucking attitude. Not everybody wants to sit alone in an empty room beating off the murder manuals. Some folks enjoy community, the common good.
Yeah, but the common good's got to make up fairy tales, and it's not good for anybody.
Your sorrows pin you to this place. They divide you from what your heart knows. And there are a lot of good hearts out there. I'm looking out there. I'm seeing a lot of good hearts out there. I see a lot of good out there.
I mean, can you imagine if people didn't believe what the things they get up to?
Exact same thing they do now. Just out in the open.
Bullshit. It'd be a fucking freak show of murder and debauchery, and you know it.
If the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation of divine reward, then, brother, that person is a piece of shit. And I'd like to get as many of them out in the open as possible.
Well, I guess your judgment is infallible, piece of shit-wise.
You think that notebook is a stone tablet?
What to say about life? You gotta get together. Tell yourself stories that violate every law of the universe. Just to get through the goddamn day. What's that say about your reality, Marty?
When you get to talking like this, you sound panicked.
You think it's all a scam, huh?
Mm.
All them folks?
Mm-hmm.
They just wrong?
Oh, yeah. Been that way since... One monkey looked at the sun and told the other monkey, he said, for you to give me your fucking share. People. So goddamn frail, they'd rather put a coin in a wishing well than buy dinner.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, your arms open and closed. The echoes of my life can never contain to see the truth about you. You move the feather in the ash, you touch the leaf with its flame.
Transference of fear and self-loathing to an authoritarian vessel. It's catharsis. He absorbs their dread with his narrative. Because of this, he's effective in proportion to the amount of certainty he can project. Certain linguistic anthropologists think that religion is a language virus that rewrites pathways in the brain, dulls critical thinking.
Well, I don't use $10 words as much as you, but for a guy who sees no point in existence, you sure fret about it an awful lot. And you still sound panicked.
At least I'm not racing to a red light.